Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. This weekend, with parades and parties, Baltimore will celebrate lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer individuals, as well as other sexual and gender minorities. And in a couple of weeks, June 28th, marks the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots, a violent clash between protesters and police following a raid on the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar in Manhattan's Greenwich Village neighborhood. This uprising marked a new chapter in the gay rights movement, the history of which younger generations may not have ever heard. Joining me to talk about the role of LGBT elders in the community is Monty Ephraim, manager of psychosocial services at the LGBT Health Resource Center and the Elder Pride Program at Chase Brexton Healthcare, as well as the Elder Pride Chair for Baltimore Pride. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also with me is Lewis Hughes, Jr., a co-founder of the Baltimore Gay Alliance, now the Pride Center of Maryland, and a co-founder of Chase Brexton Health Services. He serves on the Baltimore Heritage LGBTQ History Committee and helps lead tours in Mount Vernon, Charles Village, and Waverly. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for asking us.
Monty, during the Baltimore Pride Festival in Jude Hill Park on Sunday, there will be an Elder Pride tent. What will people be able to do there?
Well, the Elder Pride tent, this will be our third year celebrating, and the Elder Pride has actually become a footprint of Pride. What we recognized was that that generational absence, even though we were there when it began, or some of us were there when it began, we felt the need to continue to be present within the footprint of Pride. So within our Elder Pride program or our tent, people often ask, well, why do you call it Elder Pride? And I say we have a larger tent with more shade, padded seating, and very cold water. But in addition to that, we also have a historical timeline where people can, it starts in 1920, and people can start sign in where they came out. Along with that timeline are important historical events that happened in our community along the way. We also take photographs of how many people, how many years people have been out. In addition to folks like Lewis and some other of our elders, we'll be doing intergenerational circles.
So when you say we take photographs of how long people have been out,
yes,
this is a groups of people in different areas?
We have different individuals that will take a photograph, how many years they've been out, myself, 41, and they'll be posted on Facebook or on our website. So it's just kind of that inclusion, and also to see the continuum of, we've got folks that have been out for 6 months or a month to people that have been out for 50 some years. So you really get to, the Elder Pride really began with our focus in the elder community, and what we unintentionally did, but incredible experience occurred, was we created a space for an intergenerational bridge between our elders and our younger folks. They noticed we had more shade and cold water, so they often came in.
You don't think it's the padded seats?
It might be the padded seats. It could be. But we took that opportunity to really have a conversation, which we realize for us, many of us that have aged in the community, or matured, I like to say, not aged, that have matured in the community, some of the places that we had that we could socialize and get together and have conversations no longer exist. And for younger folks or people that are maybe, in their early adulthood, they have social media and other ways to reach out. I am a firm believer that that disconnect is not healthy for either generation, and having real conversations certainly takes more, there's more value to that than connecting through text or emails, and bring back the art of conversation is what we like to say.
So is that a particular goal? Is that, I'm trying to understand if there's special needs that this community has.
Sure. Social isolation is a huge, huge need and a huge issue in our community. You know, many of us have, our communities are identified communities, are often, being rejected by families or other communities that we may have lived in growing up, peers and coworkers that we either can't come out to or be included with. We find that sometimes we have to create our community of choice, which I always say, in the LGBTQ community, we have that advantage of we knew that well before anybody else did, by virtue of necessity, not of choice. So we created a community of choice. So what happens with that community is that, you know, as we mature, so do our peers. And through, whether it's through illness, chronic illness, HIV, or what other things that come up, our communities get smaller, our sphere of life gets smaller, and we become more isolated. There's an LGBTQ community center, but a lot of that is youth-centric.
Well, I am an elder, and I am 75, and I was in the first class of elders of this portion of Chase Brexton. I'm also the co-founder of Chase Brexton Health Services, and I never knew that it would be servicing me in my later years, but I need the Elder Express, which is a bus that will take us into the tent in Pride and bring us back to Chase Brexton's headquarters downtown in Mount Vernon. And because I don't walk as well as I did when we started Pride many, many years ago, many decades.
Well, tell me a bit about those early days when you were a co-founder of the Baltimore Gay Alliance in 1975, which is today known as the Pride Center of Maryland. What was it like then?
We were grassroots people, crazy, young, thinking that we're going to be young forever, and trying to get a gay rights bill passed in the city and state of Maryland.
Which you did.
Yeah, which I testified. Actually, I went for my 50th birthday with my birthday cake, my mother, and a wonderful 16-year-old lesbian to Annapolis to testify before the committee in March for the state gay rights bill, because every year the bill got to its committee hearing during the week of my birthday, but this landed on my birthday, and so we just moved the party to Annapolis, and this wonderful 16-year-old youth that I am one of the lead facilitators at that time of the youth group at the Pride Center testified for her rights, which I felt was a better approach than, you know, the approaching elder person turning 50 speaking for the youth, and they spoke for themselves.
Have you kept in touch with that young person?
No, I haven't seen her. I mean, they grow up and they go away. I'm no longer facilitating at the center. The social media replaced having a weekly youth group meeting. The group was called Sufficient As I Am, or SAME. And now kids don't have to wait for that. There are gay straight alliances in the high schools and in middle schools, and all kind of support mechanism and social media and all of these things. This is before cell phones and social media, and we actually had a switchboard we started where people called a number getting referrals and information about Baltimore. That's one of the services, starting with the Gay Alliance and going on to the Pride Center. And in between, the Pride Center was actually called the Gay and Lesbian Community Center of Baltimore.
So it's had a couple of identities.
Oh, yeah, and alphabets and changes. So,
on June 28th, the anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising, Baltimore Heritage is leading an LGBTQ heritage tour in Mount Vernon. Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the sites that are part of this tour.
The sites in Mount Vernon involve the Pride Center when it was in Mount Vernon, the places that Gertrude Stein lived when she was in medical school in Hopkins, the women that helped start the medical school in Hopkins in Mount Vernon Square, the history of the houses and how they relate to the gay community. Of course, Chase Brexton, which had been in Mount Vernon and now has a headquarters across from the Belvedere in Mount Vernon. Even John Waters' filming of certain films are part of Mount Vernon and Tyson Street and areas that are on the tour.
It sounds like quite a tour.
Oh, yeah. It's fun. It will be a great tour, 75 minutes, and you contact Baltimore Heritage. They have a way of registering.
We will include that okay. that information on the On the Record page at mm-hmm. WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Lewis Hughes, Jr., who serves on the Baltimore Heritage LGBTQ History Committee, and Monty Ephraim, manager of psychosocial services at the LGBT Health Resource Center and the Elder Pride Program at Chase Brexton Healthcare. This weekend is Baltimore's Pride celebration. Well, you obviously both think history is important, but why?
Well, one of the things that we launched our name as the Elder Pride Program on May 16th, National Honor LGBT Elders Day. One of those reasons is, as people refer to older programming or seniors, we really locked in on the elder word versus using older or senior. Basically, because in a lot of cultures, the elder is the keeper of the history. And we think that's really important because, lest we forget, you know, folks can't build on what was or what has become. And some of our younger folks, we also have to learn their history. You know, they have a historical presence as well moving forward. So to have an understanding of what the origins are of our community will help us really lock in and visualize the future as we move forward. So I think that's a really important piece. I think, you know, that culture, you know, in a cultural context, it can't be lost. So that's really important to all of us individually, as a community, as a program. I think that's a really significant piece that we share. And we have a responsibility to share with those that are coming after us and to recognize for those that have come before us, to honor them and to share with others that are coming behind us or after us.
Also, I wanted to mention that there is a very drastic need for addressing elder housing mm-hmm. in the LGBTQ community that would be friendly and supportive of their needs. And that's being looked at in Washington and Baltimore. There are other samples of communities that are existing in Philadelphia, New York, and other parts of the country. And that's a growing need because I'm a pre-baby boomer. So when the baby boomers come in, that's going to be a doubling. I was born during World War II.
I was going to say, I would call you a boomer.
No, I'm actually born in 1944. They consider baby boomers beginning in 45.
Okay.
So, you know, but... I'm older than D-Day, so, you know.
How do you see your role in the community?
Well, I see my role as explaining and growing and understanding the intergenerational things that happen and adjusting to the social media and the other new things, because I came out when we were dealing with telephones and not cell phones and not computers and internet and all the different aspects. And I grew. And it's a linking of the young and the old and everything in between. And knowing that people worked very hard, that a gay rights bill took decades to pass. And you had to have someone that would sign it once it was passed, and there's never been a federal gay rights bill. We still have to do that. We might have marriage equality, but we don't have rights in mm-hmm. many states in the South. Maryland is a wonderful example on meeting a lot of those needs, but there are many, many places that do not address those needs and still are lagging behind.
When you look back over your lifetime, what do you make of how far acceptance of LGBTQ individuals has come or hasn't?
Well, it's interesting because Lewis and I, before coming into this session, were speaking about the award ceremony, the Tonys, and how refreshing and happy we felt to see commercials from PFLAGS and others recognizing that this is, you know, the month of Pride, but at the same time understanding that responsibility or that vulnerability that we will have because with more exposure becomes more, you know, criticism from others. And, you know, when Lewis talked about housing or even long-term care, I'm 60 62 years young. I've actually shifted that phrase this year for myself. It's no longer how old are you, it's how young you are. So I'm 62 years young, and you know, I think about and I hear about stories of folks that are going into supportive care if you can get that, but also having to go back into the closet. You know, so when I say that, yes, many of us go into long-term care facilities and don't feel safe and comfortable being who we are. When you spend your whole life trying to get comfortable with who you are and how you feel and who you love, and then have to be cautious and feel unsafe and go back into the closet, it's not the journey that I want to be on.
How do you assess things when you look back over the stretch of history you've lived through?
I'm very pleased with the progress we made, but as I brought up, there are still many things that aren't addressed and still missing. And certainly, that's why I was bringing up the housing, and you have to deal with the cultural competence of the staff of the nursing homes and the care facility and the stigmas that are there, even with the law. In place, you still have to change behaviors and not go back to where we came from. And a lot of people don't realize the struggle that it took to get here. And there's many things that we still have to do, you know, that need to be addressed. Mm-hmm. And there have been some wonderful signs of churches and communities and ministers reaching out to the community, which I didn't think would always happen. And there is a change for the better, but we still have a lot of work to do.
I'm really grateful to you for this conversation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for asking.
Monty Ephraim is the Elder Pride Chair for Baltimore Pride. Lewis Hughes Jr. serves on the Baltimore Heritage LGBTQ History Committee. You can find out more about the events of Baltimore Pride and Baltimore Heritage's LGBT History Tour at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. I'm Sheila Gass. Quick break, and then a Stoop story about fatherhood. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks!